worshipped. I want to be loved.
I've told you a million times not to talk to me when I'm doing my lashes.
Oh, it's you. I didn't know you with all your clothes on.
You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view.
What am I going to tell you? You look like a woman.
Well, girls, looks like it's back to the perfume counter for me. And by the way, there's a name for you ladies, but it isn't used in high society, outside of a kennel.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Goldwyn Girls podcast. We are your hosts, Amelia and Meredith, and it's been, like, I think almost a month since we've done a podcast, and that's because life happens, and also Meredith had the corony, and we're glad that she's okay.
Yes.
The corony.
Yeah, I kept saying, I was like, I have the Rona, I got the Rona, but yeah, I'm lucky. I was only like sick for a couple days, and that I just felt like I had the regular flu. So I'm glad to be back, and I hate that it's been like it's been literally like a month or a little over. So
please forgive us. So our film that we're going to be talking about today is Grey Gardens, the iconic documentary. And we will talk about that later. I'm going to start off just going through some housekeeping. I'm going to do some of the polls that I did long, long ago. But actually, like, the polls have gotten more fun to do because people our age in their 20s who have these classic Hollywood accounts or Twitter's accounts, they love to participate in our polls and, like, comment. And it's a lot of fun. This, you know, the last three I did were a lot of fun. But, so I did a poll. I said, who would you rather French kiss? And the first one I said was Howard Hughes, then Al Jolson. And I put Al Jolson in parentheses, no blackface. And then Spencer Tracy, and then Bing Crosby. And Spencer Tracy won. And Al Jolson only got 3.7%. The next poll I did was the next day, and I said, who would you want to be your gynecologist? Because I love doing this poll, and I keep thinking of worse choices each time to put in. So I said, I don't know how to say his name correctly. I always fuck it up, but it's S-Z Sackle? Sackle?
I think it's Sackle, but I don't know if that's right. That's what I think in my head, at least.
Cuddles. I put parentheses Cuddles.
Mr. Cuddles, yes.
Lionel Barrymore. Al Jolson, parentheses, no blackface. And then Ned Sparks. Lionel Barrymore won, which makes sense because he played a doctor. And so that was the safest choice. Cuddles was second. Ned Sparks was third. And Al Jolson got 0 votes. 0.
It's what she deserves. I'm conditioning the, like, Kim Kardashian gif.
So this was my favorite poll, and also way too on the nose since you got corona. But I got I did a poll where it says, I said, oh no, there's a second wave of the virus. Who would you choose to be your second wave bunker buddy?
I forgot about that.
I made a way too safe choice for that one. Like, I should have. So I did one where it's Marie Dressler. That was one of the choices. Sydney Greenstreet's ass. That was the second choice. Ronald Reagan and Bonzo. And Wallace Beery's corpse. Marie Dressler won. She had 74%. I mean, that was like everyone else barely got any votes. And then to piss people off, I retweeted my own poll. And I said, when I got the results in, I said, if you chose Marie Dressler, you unfortunately will contract COVID-19 because she entered the bunker with a fever. Someone said, worth it. They were like,
right, honestly.
I mean, Sydney Greenstreet's ass, who knows what diseases are in there? I don't know.
Oh,
Reagan. I know. I'm just saying, who knows? Who knows? Sydney Green's a little sleuth. We don't know. He could have been prancing that badonkadonk all around L.A. We don't know.
I hope so. Good for him.
I should ask my grandpa about him, since my grandpa sat on his lap in the 1940s. I'll be like,
okay, because I was like, wait, how old was he?
My grandpa was like 4.
Oh. At first I was like,
how big was that badonk? Do you remember? Was he a thickums? My grandpa would be like, what? You have no idea what. But it was really great, and I think it was nice because it was free. You know, you didn't have to pay to go and watch any of the films. They were all public domain because then you don't have to pay for rights. And yeah, it was just a lot of fun. And I would recommend donating to them if you can, just so they can keep going and hopefully next year have a in-person festival. And one of my favorite moments of the CineCon online experience was they did KineCon at CineCon, which is when they run a bunch of kinescopes from a kinescope collector's collection. And they have some really great, you know, because live television back then, it's just really fun to watch a lot of that stuff and stuff I've never seen before. So it was really nice. And I would recommend keeping in touch with what they do. And that leads me to Museum of Home Video, which right now I have in the background. They're doing a Jerry Lewis telethon marathon, and it's like 4 hours, 4 or 5 hours of Jerry Lewis telethon marathon moments. It's like the best, it's like a best of, and it's really great. The person who puts it on, Brett, he is really amazing. And I would recommend tuning into their shows every Tuesday. They do a lot of fun stuff. With home video, found footage, and everything. So, yes, please go on their Twitch and their website, Museum of Home Video, and follow what they do. And I will be having this Jerry Lewis telethon in the background all day because it's the only thing getting me through this 111-degree day right now. That and the coffee I have next to me. Meredith, do you want to lead us into our film discussion for today?
Of course, yeah. So we are going to be discussing, like we said before, the 1975 documentary Great Gardens, which was directed, produced and everything basically by David and Albert Maisels, the iconic filmmaking team. So this film documents just like the day-to-day lives of Edith. Well, actually, so how do I want to like introduce the names here? And sure, I want to call them like Big Edie and Little Edie, but I feel like I need to like preface this. So we have the senior Edith, Big Edie Beale. Her says her full name is Edith Big Edie Ewing. I think it's Ewing. Bouvier Beale. And Edith Little Edie Bouvier Beale. And these two women are at this point in the 70s, they are reclusive, former socialite, upper class women, and mother and daughter now who basically live in this former like beautiful estate called Great Gardens, which is a mansion in the, I believe it's the Hampton. It's in East Hampton, New York. And so it basically at this point in the introduction of the film, it'll show like news clips and talking about kind of the how these two women were formerly very well off, and now that they live in poverty in this big house. And basically the one of the other big important things about these two women is that they are direct relatives of the former U.S. First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, Jackie O. And so Big Edie is the aunt, and Edith, Little Edie, is the cousin of Jackie O. And basically, the mother and daughter lived together at Grey Gardens for, I can't remember how many years, but again, they were in poverty and living in essentially a squalor. And if I'm correct on this too, they like never go out. I don't think they ever do. They are like total recluses. So this in the film, which I'm going to get into a little bit more with Amelia here in a few minutes.
This podcast is a shout out to my professor, Professor Rivera, who taught my documentary film class. It was a topics class. We talked about Grey Gardens and the Maisels and, you know, documentary. And I know I didn't talk a lot in class, but this is for you. I'm making up for it in this podcast. I just had to get that in. Going to kind of what cinema verite is, they both deal with revealing truth about something, about their subjects, and understanding truth or depicting life as it happens. But the way they go about it is very different. Cinema verite is kind of like a more aggressive way of going about the truth. They do intervention, you know, they talk to the subjects, they interview them, they ask, you know, they kind of lead them into discussions. They're not really trying to blend in with the background. They're making themselves known. And so by kind of trying to interrogate the truth out of their subjects, they're hoping to reveal some truth in that way, or find truth in that way. Direct cinema is pretty much the exact opposite, where the camera person or the director is not trying to make themselves known. They're just trying to capture life as it unfolds in the background, that, you know, they call it fly on the wall. And they edit the footage later to kind of reveal truth and make out a narrative with what footage they've caught, because it's a lot of it's just them filming life rather than, okay, we're going to have a interview with this subject and we're going to ask them questions that evoke some kind of emotional response. And like I told Meredith yesterday, you know, Chronicle of a Summer, I think from 1962, is one of the most well-known cinema verite films. And usually the Maisels and D.A. Pennybaker films are usually noted as like direct cinema films. Anyway, that was just my point. I did not mean to go off on a tangent.
So actually, I'm glad you did that, because like this is what we do, and it's like a learning experience as we talk, and so I really appreciate that.
It's only been drilled into my head like 500 times, so from school.
You've gotten the chance to educate people about what you've been educated about. I love it. Okay, so basically, so I already sort of introduced the Big Edie and Little Edie, because this is what we will basically be referring to them as for the rest of the time. So just going to go ahead and start saying that. So like I said, again, this is respectively the aunt and the first cousin of Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. And so just a really quick, like, little background on Grey Gardens and these women. Basically, what I'm reading right now, it says the house was designed in 1897 by Joseph Greenleaf Thorpe, purchased in 1923 by Big Edie and her husband. And I can't remember how to say his name. Is it Phelan? Phelan? Beale? I think it's something like that. So after
I think it's Phelan.
Fallon. Okay, thank you. So after, I'm just going to say her husband, after her husband left Big Edie, and after he left her and little Edie, they lived there for more than 50 years. And the house was called Grey Gardens because of the color of the dunes, the cement garden walls, and the sea mist. And basically, I think if I remember correctly from reading, that they think they actually filmed this starting in like the early 70s, because it mentions here throughout the fall of 71 and into 72, their living conditions are insane. And you'll see this documented in the film. Basically they have, there's like that scene in the attic, and they also just like refer to it at least once or twice, where they've got raccoons and cats like cohabitating together. And I shouldn't laugh because it's like terrible, but it's like they're just living up in the attic, and they're very casual about just talking about it. And so that's why I kind of laugh, because it's just like, oh yeah, no, the cats and the raccoons are up in the attic, and little Edie goes and like feeds them upstairs and just takes a like a big bag and just dumps it on the ground. And
she likes feeding them Wonder Bread.
Oh my god, Wonder Bread, yes. And like, so she means well. It's just like, it's crazy. And I don't remember this. I'm reading this here, and I didn't remember that it says they were deprived of running water. And then like basically I would say that they're hoarders, because I mean they have a ton of things that are just stacked up in the house. And like Big Edie is she's pretty much like bedridden, like at least like during most of the filming, like she'll just lie down like either in her bed or on the porch, and like doesn't do a whole lot. Little Edie's like, I don't know if she had ADHD or something, but she's kind of just like all over the place, and she's like, she's still like in good like physical condition and everything, and she just kind of does her thing. And basically, like, looking at all of this, it's a very interesting, I think it's a very interesting character study as well, like comparing Big Edie and Little Edie and looking at their relationship. It's very interesting. One thing really quick I wanted to say before I go more into that, and like we go into more of like our favorite parts. I wanted to mention, and this is brought up, I believe, in the beginning of the film. Basically, the living conditions of the Beals at Grey Gardens was exposed as the result of an article in the National Enquirer, and also there was a cover story in the New York Magazine. This happened after a series of inspections, which Big Edie and Little Edie called it a raid by the county health department. So basically, they faced eviction and demolition of their house in the summer of 1972. And actually, Jackie O and her sister provided funds, like enough money to stabilize and then repair the house so that it would bring it back up to code, which obviously is a very good thing too. And I'm, you know, it's like they really try to help them out with that. And then Albert and David Maisels became interested in their story, and then they received permission to film a documentary about the women going on to become Grey Gardens. And it was released in 1976, but we put it down as 1975. And so let me go ahead. I brought up the whole character study, but I want to bring you back into this discussion. So can you tell me, like, what are some of your favorite parts? Do you have any favorite scenes or favorite quotes or anything like that? Because I feel like we're probably going to have a lot of the same ones.
Almost as a whole, it's just so interesting to see how so in their own world they are. Just by the way they dress, the way they talk. The memories they have. It's like, and you know, just like how decrepit the house is, it's kind of like they're frozen in time. And time is a big theme in the film. And it's interesting because I don't want to like diagnose or anything, But I found this blog that might be a little interesting. And I don't know how I feel about, you know, people diagnosing people from afar, because you can, you never really, unless you're like a client, you'll never really be able to, you know, 100% diagnose someone. But I found this autism awareness website, and this person who wrote a blog for this website talks about how she thinks that both women have Asperger's syndrome.
Oh,
which I think is interesting. Yeah, okay. And I don't, you know, I don't know too much about, I mean, the fact I think they're unique, and I think a lot of people wish they could be that so unconventional and just not care about what other people think. Edie's so confident in everything she does in this film. I mean, the outfits. What does she say? She says something like, I think this is the best outfit for the day.
Yeah. Oh, I love all of the ensembles she puts together. Oh my God. Yes.
And just her, like, that she's a staunch woman, and all of that is just so good.
S-T-A-U-N-C-H. Staunch. Love it.
I think she's a philosophical queen, to be honest. Like, mm-hmm. It's almost like she's in her own world, and she just sees things so uniquely and differently. And it's like, I think that's why it's so charming in a way. It's like fascinating. And of course people are like, well, it's exploitive, or, you know, but I don't know if that's, you know, it's hard to say, but I don't know if the intent was exploitation or not. I mean, isn't that most documentaries? Aren't most documentaries exploitive?
yeah, for sure. Yeah, or at least they can come off like that, you know, even if it's unintentionally. Yeah, it's an interesting thing to think about, too, because you're like, well, you know, it's like, it definitely could be, but at the same time, it's like, well, it's fascinating to look into these people's lives, and a lot of us, like, appreciate them. It's, you know, it's like, you know, maybe some people could look at them and be like, oh, there's, like, just, like, two, you know, it's kind of like a freak show or something, and it's like, I've never once thought of them like that, because it's, especially with little Edie. I feel like she's just like, I think I said this like the other day, and I've said this before. I was like, I would give anything to be like best friends with her. I genuinely think that she was probably an amazing person, and I would love to spend at least a day with her and just hang out. And, I don't know, but I got a good feeling about her.
I think that
it's
like what you said. It's like, you know, if you feel kind of like an outsider, and, you know, in any way in your life, and you come upon this film, it kind of is comforting in a way. It's like, because, you know, they're technically outsiders, and they live unconventional lifestyles, and it's almost, you know, it can be relatable to some people. At least, you know, I felt that way. It's like I feel some kind of, camaraderie with them.
Yeah, well, same here too. Like, and I'm glad you brought that up as well, because, you know, that's probably a big part of why I feel like I was like, oh, I think I get along with little Edie really well, because sometimes I think we probably both of us are sort of in the similar place where obviously we have some distinct hobbies and like interests, and, you know, as when I was younger, and even now to a big extent at this age, you know, sometimes it's hard to relate to people, not counting sometimes online, and not counting that a little bit, but I don't know, like, sometimes, you know, I would love to hang out, you know, with somebody like her, because she's just so carefree, as you said, and does what she wants, and I'm like, yes, that is everything I love and appreciate in life, is just people who do their own thing. And I've definitely, you know, felt like an outsider for a lot of my life, you know, like, I have friends and everything like that, and amazing friends, and but there's just still always that kind of feeling you have where you're like, I just don't know exactly where I fit in, but you know that you would like completely fall in with somebody like her, and it is very comforting to think about that.
I had a question for you. And this kind of goes back to the cinema verite, direct cinema kind of question or discussion that we had earlier. But do you think that, especially with Little Edie, I think more so, do you think it's all a performance, like she's constantly performing? Or do you think there's moments of sincerity, or do you think it's 100% sincere and that's just how she is?
Yeah, so that's a really good question, too. I believe, honestly, that I think that they were being genuine. At most, I'm sure that at some points they probably were a little performative, and I feel like that happens for a lot of people when they get in front of the camera. So I'm going to assume that there was probably a little bit of that at least, because it's so easy, like especially for like people with personalities like theirs, I feel like it's so easy to get kind of, you know, kind of like an exaggerated version of yourself, where you're playing it up a little bit and, like, you know, just being a little extra silly or a little extra dramatic or something. But for the core of it, I just genuinely feel like I think that that was them. And I don't even know how to I really don't know how to explain that well. It's just kind of my gut reaction, just kind of my feeling. And they seem so natural about it all. Like I don't feel like Little Edie was trying too hard to be quirky. I feel like that really was her. I don't know, just how candid she was, and just mm-hmm. how well spoke she is. Even though she says some things that you're like, what are you saying? I think she's very eloquent, and she seems like she puts a lot of thought into what she wants to say. Even when it comes down to, like, one of my favorite parts is like when she's sitting down and she's got the magnifying glass out and she's reading the horoscope book, and like she's so sincere about it. You know, she's like talking about I can't remember who she's talking about, but, you know, some guy or whatever, and compatibility. And it's just like she's so earnest about everything. And like you said, she's like philosophical queen. Like, she's just so thorough in, like, what she believes in. And also, like, those moments when she and Big Edie are just bickering. I think that feels realistic. I feel like that they just... maybe they were playing it up a little bit, but I feel like genuinely that's probably how they were. And it's kind of, I feel like there's like some really, as funny as they can be sometimes when they're fighting, and like when Little Edie says her, you know, her things, there's like moments of like sadness, and like where you're just like, oh my God, this is like, wow, they're not in a good situation. And, you know, sometimes like Big Edie will say these things to it's like she's just like sort of like manipulating or like cutting Little Edie down emotionally, and you can tell it seems like Little Edie was basically kind of held back from what she wanted to do in life to take care of her mother. And then it's just like it gets real and you're like, oh my God, this isn't good. So I genuinely think that was pretty realistic. What do you think, though?
I think, you know, because I think it's probably both to some extent. You know, when she does the flag dance, that's literally a performance. Unless mm-hmm. she does that, you know, actually on her own when the cameras aren't there. Mm-hmm. But like you said, when they're arguing, and she's just talking about, like, well, you should have married him, or you should have done this, mm-hmm. or you should have done that, you know, Big Edie to Little Edie. I think that is sincere, because you do see her become very upset, or she doesn't want to talk about it, or she's kind of running away from all these things that she should have done or could have done. And she just, you know, she feels, I think she kind of feels frozen in time, like I said earlier. So I think those are pretty sincere. And I'm wondering, you know, because I've never been on a documentary, But if it gets to the point where the cameras are around just so much that you become just so used to them that you don't know, you know, it's like, what's the line between reality and fiction? Are you just putting on an act and you've kind of like become an act, or are you just becoming yourself now that you're used to the cameras? But I do think that, yeah, for the most part, she is sincere. And it's so interesting how it, the film flows, because there's these very serious moments that they have, you know, very serious discussions. And then it goes to something completely ridiculous, like her reading the astrology book, or her feeding the raccoons Wonder Bread, or her talking about her fashion choices. I think it's just, I love the tone shifts, and I think it really works. I mean, because it's documentary, and you kind of expect tone shifts in documentary. I think one interesting thing, you know, I brought up in Chronicle of a Summer earlier, is that, which is why I brought up the truth thing, is because in that film, the directors are actually trying to figure out what the truth is. Like, can the truth be brought out if you interrogate your subject enough? And interrogate's kind of a strong word, but, you know, just ask questions or like persuade someone to do something on camera. And if you see that film, you know, and I don't want to spoil it. So if you are listening, it's not really a spoiler, but it kind of is, then skip ahead. But at the end of the film, because you're watching this documentary and you're watching these people be interviewed, different subjects in Paris. I think it's in Paris. And at the end of the film, it shows like all of the people that were interviewed throughout the film watching themselves on the screen with the directors. And the funny part is that they're all talking about how, oh, that seemed really insincere, that moment when she was crying on camera. I don't think that was true. I think that moment was true, when he was talking about, you know, race or whatever. You know, it's just, it was interesting to see who thought what was insincere and what was sincere. And I like at the end of the film, the directors are kind of just like, shrug, the truth is complex. We never really, you know, we didn't really come to an answer. And I kind of feel like that with, you know, I guess with Grey Gardens, although I feel, you know, it's less, obviously the subjects are being less manipulated, or we're led to believe they're being less manipulated because we don't see the Maisels interject at all. It's you know, we'll never really actually know, because it's like a philosophical question. What is truth? And how can you tell if something's authentic or not? But I think the Maisels do a really good job at just finding really small moments out of, you know, a long time, you know, it's like long scenes, but there's like these little glimmers of nuggets of just some like that tell you like so much in one small interaction. I'm thinking of their film Primary in particular from 1960, which I would recommend. Albert Maisel and D.A. Pennybaker, you should all watch that film. It's really great. They're filming two presidential candidates, John F. Kennedy and Hubert Humphrey, and they're just kind of showing the behind the scenes of the election. But you just see like small moments of the two candidates. Like you see Hubert Humphrey just falling asleep on the car ride because he's so exhausted. Or you see like girls chasing after Kennedy. It's just like these small things that are just become big things, and I guess can be overanalyzed or analyzed forever. And I think Grey Gardens is so full of all that kind of stuff, which I think makes it always interesting to view, because you'll, at least for me, I pull new things out of it each time that I didn't notice before.
Yeah, there's like so much to ponder about. I feel like every little facet about this film, like I said again, it's like the character study, or like you brought up, like, are they being manipulated? And I'm sure that it would be easy. I would think it would be really easy to manipulate these, like both of them, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know how I'm trying to say that, but like So it makes you wonder maybe if there was some of that going on, but just because of how seemingly like they're very spirited and sensitive, especially little Edie. And so it just makes you wonder if, you know, they were like, oh, probably could figure out how to push their buttons pretty easily. But I don't know, just like a lot of questions about that. But
sometimes with like they're reading the astrology book or I guess the flag dance in particular, it's like I kind of compare it to a reality TV show. I mean, God, if they could have made a reality TV show out of these two women, that would have been like the most amazing thing ever. But I have to wonder, it's like the filming was behind the scenes. Did they say, oh, go do something, like just have, like go read a book or go do this dance, or hey, look at that, do you think you want to do, you know, I just wonder like how filming went about behind the scenes. And I also want to note that two women also directed the film. Ellen, I think her name's Ellen Hoft, I might be pronouncing that wrong, mm-hmm. and then Muffy Meyer. They also edited it, and a woman named Susan Fromick, I think, also edited it.
Fromke, probably?
You're, I don't so know if that's much right. Better at pronouncing last names than me.
Also, thank you for bringing them up, because I legitimately, like a few minutes ago, was scanning that, and I, in my head, I was like, I did not mention them, because you always think of the Maisels, like the Maisel brothers. And so, sorry, I just want to say thank you for mentioning that too, because I looked it back and I was like, I'm sorry, Ellen and Muffy, I'm so sorry.
I think it's really cool that Muffy Meyer, she did some editing for Gilda Live about Gilda Radner.
Okay.
In 1980. Sure. But she, I think she is most well known for working with the Maisels for Grey Gardens. And I also don't know if you, have you, Meredith, have you seen Salesman?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
Oh my gosh, you need to watch it. It's a really great documentary. It's just like, it's
well, both Ellen Hovde and Muffy Meyer, because yeah, like that's, it sucks that they're, I mean, it's kind of I hate to say like sort of the usual, oh yeah, these women also directed and, you know, they did stuff, but it's like, can't find anything about them, so they're gonna be shoved in a corner. I hate that.
That's
so
what you get for being a woman.
I know. Yeah, I just really want to do them justice and find more information, because it's like they worked on such an iconic film, and they need to be more well known. So
it's just interesting how technology plays in to, you know, genres. Pennebaker, D.A. Pennebaker, who Albert Maisel worked with on Primary, developed one of the first portable synchronized 16 millimeter cameras with sound recording, which helped. So if not for that, Grey Gardens would not have been possible.
Yeah, that's wow. That's awesome. I'm glad you brought that up as well. That's incredible. And
yeah, I wrote a whole paper on it. Oh well.
Yes, it's finally coming back to you, like putting it to extra use. I love it.
I know. I'm really using my degree today. Do you have any favorite moments you want to talk about?
Any of my favorite moments just usually involve little Edie when I like the moments when she's outside and either on their deck or in the yard, excuse me, and she is just kind of going off in her, like, you know, we were like talking about her, like sort of filth or whatever. That's honestly my favorite part. It's just like when she has the spotlight and she's going off, the staunch character. I try to do the accent really well and I can't, like, she talks about like, oh, they're, I can't remember who she's talking about, but they was like they're dealing with staunch characters, and like the SHIT, all of this stuff. I adore every moment like that. And the like when she's reading her the horoscope book, I really don't think I can narrow down from there, because it's just like little Edie. That's who I love watching. I think I love her especially just when she's on her own, because she seems to be her most natural and sometimes her happiest, because she's not having to bicker with her mom and being like, you know, spoken over. Like, she just gets to flourish on her own, and I'm like, yes. Also, I want to give a shout out to Jerry the handyman, because he seems like the chillest guy. Were you?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, awesome. I love when he's just hanging out with them.
I know. I like when, doesn't she, you know, when she makes him corn on the cob? It's just so great. Like, you know, no one else invites their handyman for corn on the cob.
And they're like in the bedroom. And so like, isn't Big Edie like making it like when she's on the bed, or there's something going on and they're like in the bedroom and he's just like, he's like, I don't know if he's like sitting on the floor or sitting on the other bed or something. And it's just, yeah, they're just like chilling out. And he's just like the most kind of quiet. You can tell he just seems to just kind of go with the flow. He's just like, I'm here for whatever. And I don't know. I love him.
Or Brooks. We don't really see a lot of Brooks, the gardener. But I just wonder, I wish they, you know, even though it wasn't a kind of cinema verite style, I wish that they would have interviewed Jerry and Brooks separately and just kind of like ask their opinions on the Beals, because I'm actually really interested.
Yeah, you wonder what they could have said. And also, I know they used the extra, they shot like, I don't know how many hours of footage, but I think I read somewhere maybe how much it was. I can't remember. But anyway, they shot a bunch of footage, obviously, of this. And I know I watched, I just watched this, the original Great Gardens for the second time recently. And then after watching that, I watched it with an online friend, actually. Shout out to Leon, if you're listening. We actually watched the Beals of Great Garden after that. And that was, I think if I'm correct, that was made with just basically a bunch of the extra previously unused footage from Grey Gardens. So it makes me wonder, I'm assuming there's probably even more unused footage that's never been compiled before. And they probably didn't do the interviews, because I would assume they would have used them if they had. Mm-hmm. But it kind of makes me wonder maybe if there is any kind of one-on-one footage with Jerry or Brooks or anybody else.
Yeah, I've never seen that version or that second film. Maybe I have. I can't really remember. I haven't seen the Drew Barrymore film either.
I want to see that at some point. Yeah, that looks interesting. So just like to kind of to wrap up, I didn't mention this earlier, but just to give like a little teeny more background information and kind of like the afterword and reception to the film. But one thing really quick for the production, kind of pre-production, was that Albert and David Maisels, they had the original idea for the documentary that they were going to make before Great Gardens became Great Gardens, was that they were wanting to make a documentary based on, and I don't know if I'm saying this name correctly, but Lee Radziwill, which was, I mentioned her earlier, I think. She was the younger sister of Jackie Kennedy. So she was also a relation, of course, to Big and Little Edie. The Maisels suggested to her, to Lee, that they make a documentary. She asked them to make a documentary about her childhood in East Hampton, and just happened to take them to Great Gardens to see what was going on there. And according to Ellen Hovde, the film, at first the film was being funded by Lee, and then when the brothers basically showed her the early footage for the documentary, it was a bunch of footage of Big and Little Edie, and they were like trying to convince her that a documentary about them would be better than shooting one about her childhood. And she was like, yeah, no, thank you. So she confiscated their negatives and then withdrew her funding from them. And so they basically went and shot and recorded all the footage by themselves when they went through the idea of making Grey Gardens. And it does mention also in the production section here, what I'm reading, that Ellen Hovde and Muffy Meyer received co-directing credit for their editing work. So I'm glad at least that they were credited for that. Even though, like I said, they're not really that much talked about. So Big Edie died in 1977. So just 2 years after the film came out, Little Edie sold Grey Gardens in 79 for $220,000, which would be equivalent to nearly $800,000 today. And then Little Edie died in Florida in 2002 at the age of 84. And I think I read a while back that I think she tried to do like theater or like cabaret or something, but like was not received well. And I feel like so bad for her because I think she got panned for whatever she tried to do. And I'm just like, she did not deserve that. But anyway, I'm glad though, it seemed like she got to kind of live the life that she wanted to in her older age. And I hope that she was at least happy in her later years, because it sounds like she definitely may have been. Gardens was selected by the Library of Congress for preservation in 2010 for the U.S. National Film Registry as being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. And in 2014, Sight and Sound poll, in a 2014 Sight and Sound poll, film critics voted the film the joint ninth best documentary film of all time, which I don't know about you, but I feel like that is well deserved to be listed on that list. And I think that's all. It's like a ton of stuff, but again, there's like such an interesting background to it. I'm like, I don't know what to say and what not to say.
I do want to say that hopefully we, you know, aside from Grey Gardens, hopefully we will be recording more frequently, or we, you know, not once a month, maybe every 2 weeks. And also that we have some really great ideas brewing for future podcasts, and one featuring an interview with a director, which may happen soon. So please look forward to that. And, you know, follow our social media. We have Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And hopefully I'll be doing some more fun polls to torment you all with.
Yeah, that is a promise. We will be putting those up soon. And again, what you said, follow us. Yeah, follow us on social media if you would like to see more of that content. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please, if you like the podcast, please give us a good rating and subscribe. I'm assuming you're subscribed if you're listening, but if not, please do. And otherwise, you know, keep wearing your mask, be safe out there. If you are going out, stay inside if you can. And we will be back soon with another episode. I can't wait to be back. And I'm glad to be back as well and feeling a lot better. And this feels good. So
we will see you all next time. And this is us signing off. And bye.
Bye.